And we're a little bit behind time, but I think it would be best perhaps to have the fisheries presentation taking place before lunch, which is, I think, appropriate to talk about fish before lunch. So I look forward to have Ms. Wald give her we schedule 30 minutes. And also, when you're done, Stephanie, later this afternoon, fill out a card for me so I'll have on record. Yeah, you can give it to me later. Oh. You did your homework. Thank you.
Use the arrow key.
Okay. Oh, it's everywhere. Good afternoon. You hear me? Good afternoon. My name is Steph Wald, and I have served as the Watershed Projects Manager with Central Coast Salmon Enhancement since the early 2000s. I actually attended some of the first Ag Order meetings, and that experience has informed how we work with ag partners ever since. Central Coast Salmon Enhancement were farmers. We were fish farmers at first, raising Chinook salmon that you might have for lunch, from fingerling size to smolt size. We also work with private and public landowners and teachers toward benefiting fisheries, watersheds, and local communities. In our restoration efforts, we have in the past and continue to work on invasive species to improve habitat. We do some water quality monitoring, volunteer water quality monitoring. And we have worked on barrier modifications in several watersheds, including Arroyo Grande and Pismo Creeks. And we also perform an educational function for our community, including watershed forums. We have worked with landowners in the Big Sur River, Nacimiento, San Antonio, Santa Rosa Creek, Pismo, Arroyo Grande, Napomo, as well as the Santa Maria River, using a stakeholder-driven process to bring people of all stripes together in all land uses in those watershed forums. We also have sponsored technical trainings from fish passage to bioengineering to water rights. And we also work with youth. We have a program called Trout in the Classroom, where we bring incubator tanks into a classroom and kids have an opportunity to raise up eggs, fish eggs, trout eggs to fingerling size and then release them in a landlocked body of water. We most recently have been provided funding from the state for the drought response outreach program for schools and are working with the Luciamar Unified School District to put in LID and other water conservation measures. And one of our newest programs is actually called DIG, Pismo Clams. So we work a lot with youth in our communities through private, public, and donor-funded programs. I'm going to provide a few highlights of riparian projects that are surrounded by ag lands and talk a little bit about each of these projects. You see Pismo Creek on the left is a fish passage barrier at the Union Pacific Railroad crossing. We continue to work with the landowner in this area to remediate this fish passage barrier. And on the right is the stream gauge on Arroyo Grande Creek. We are continuing to work with the county that operates this gauge to protect the downstream releases for ag, but also to remove this fish passage barrier. In the last 5 years, we began understanding our countywide low stream flow issues. And we began to receive funding from a fairly new Wildlife Conservation Board program, Stream Flow Enhancement Program. And we conducted 3 years of monitoring all across San Luis Obispo County, and also evaluated the Cal Poly Rainwater Harvesting Project that was put in by the California Conservation Corps and Cal Poly under NOAA funding. And we're also doing some pre-project monitoring for a site that's actually owned by the city of San Luis Obispo. It's on an area called Fox Hollow Road, and we have funding to do a feasibility study to pull off peak flows from San Luis Obispo Creek, as well as catch rainwater in an old, no longer functioning reservoir. Ultimately, this water, if we are able to build this down the road, will release water into a low flow site at Cuesta Park. Another project that we are embarking on in Santa Barbara and Ventura counties is called the Planning and Feasibility Study for Integrated Water Strategies. We're working with a team to site 6 to 10 projects in target watersheds with interested landowners to find parcels that are well suited to increase infiltration and to reduce consumptive use. We're doing this through a modeling effort. The model consists of all land uses in a watershed and uses published data sets on land use variables such as steelhead rearing, steelhead migration, barriers to migration, land covers that are pervious and impervious, stream flow, soil groups, the various management scenarios in terms of land use, and water supply diversions. And the goal is to project an increment of water that would be dedicated to the stream as an output. A water attorney is also part of the team to assist our landowner outreach and education efforts in this project. The project is guided by a technical advisory committee composed of subject matter experts and landowners from the project watersheds. That's me facilitating a meeting. The ultimate goal of integrated water strategies is to populate the model, as I described before, in our subject watersheds, and to produce maps that will look quite a bit like this, that will help the team identify geographic locations four possible projects that will increase infiltration and reduce consumptive use. Several of our subject watersheds were affected by last year's Thomas Fire, and we're not quite sure what we're going to do with those. We're still trying to figure out how best to model those situations. San Ysidro, Montecito Creek, San Antonio Creek all were severely burned. So we're still trying to figure that out. And we're outreaching to, and we will outreach to the identified locations and the landowners for interest with whom the team will partner to develop 50% plans for projects that increase infiltration and reduce consumptive use. We chose these watersheds because we already have a fair amount of interest from landowners. And so we hope we can get them further along in their understanding and put these projects into 50% plans within the next year and a half. Back to San Luis Obispo County, we are working with a core of landowners in the middle reaches of Santa Rosa Creek, leveraging the past decade of local watershed and regional assessment and planning. We have had done a key percolation zone study countywide and specifically focusing on Santa Rosa Creek. Cal Poly has done a hydraulic surface water model for Santa Rosa Creek. There has been a regional in-stream flow study assisted with the IRWM program in SLO. And I mentioned earlier we're doing our low flow monitoring, also covers Santa Rosa Creek. And almost a decade ago, we participated in the development of a Santa Rosa Creek watershed management plan. And also the county has a phase one watershed management plan. So we're trying to leverage all of this planning effort into an area where we have quite a bit of landowner support, about 9 landowners in the middle reaches of Santa Rosa Creek. And the Santa Rosa Creek Flow Enhancement Pilot Project builds upon these watershed plannings, the PERC study, the hydrologic modeling, and one of the goals is to find places for aquifer recharge. And I was very interested to hear about perhaps combining some components of this study with perhaps some needs that the regional board may have in terms of tracking groundwater, in terms of how long it takes groundwater to pop out in the creek and the alluvium, and what that quality of water is as it moves through in terms of the last presentation. So that kind of got me thinking in terms of what we are doing in Santa Rosa Creek and how we might be able to piggyback some water quality monitoring on that groundwater as we are doing the studies to figure out how long it's going to take to move that water essentially from the land to the riparian area. And so we are doing those studies now. We're doing a modeling for a recharge basin for ag water use, and coming up with some placements for recharge ponds, as well as floodplain reconnection during peak flows. So the photo on the left is on a property in Santa Rosa Creek, and this is an area that a landowner has identified with us to possibly put in basically a check dam to slow the water down, slow it, sink it, spread it, and then share it is many people's motto. And then on the right side is a floodplain floodplain terrace for possible inundation during peak flows. And this is where I had in mind to perhaps do some piggybacking to figure out how we can do some groundwater quality monitoring while we're also figuring out what the duration times are for groundwater travel back to the riparian zone in this area. One landowner has already installed a basin that is passive. It collects water in high storm events. It perks for days or weeks, depending upon the severity of the storms, and it refills multiple times over the rainy season. This is adjacent to the riparian zone and the alluvium, and our WCB project will be assessing perk amount and timing to creek and supporting base flow. The pilot will help us understand practices for ultimately supporting creek-based flow throughout. And these recharge basins in the wintertime, we hope, will hold the water long enough for the low flow time and release it. That's a big part of what we'll be taking a look at in terms of the distance from the riparian and how long it takes to move to support base flow. The pilot will also help the team package incentive thinking to spread these practices, including water conservation, grant funding, and marketing. And that last one, fish-friendly farming, has come up over the years a number of times with other partners from the vineyard team to the RCDs, and we keep not getting it started. And I would like to see us really make some headway on that in terms of a voluntary marketing program with agriculture to benefit all parties, so that some of these benefits can be accrued, including long-term solutions for groundwater management and ecosystem recovery, adaptations to climate change, in-stream flow for sensitive species, improved water quality, both surface and groundwater, and to reduce flood risk. Recently, Central Coast Salmon Enhancement received a two-year contract to serve as the Salinas River Watershed Coordinator with the Upper Salinas Les Tablas Resource Conservation District. And so you see there the headwaters to the mouth of the Salinas. And since the Salinas covers two counties, there are challenges in coordination and cooperation for water resources. Some of these challenges include water board listings, water operations. There are several dams in this system, and they all operate slightly differently for different reasons, but for the most part are all related to irrigated ag downstream. And also a challenge that is currently being faced by the reservoirs includes invasives such as mussels and on-land Arundo, which gratefully the Monterey County RCD is beginning to make headway on. One component of our contract with RCD is to build a steelhead trout conceptual model for the entire river to assist interested parties as they work with state and federal agencies to permit water operations, including the Monterey County Water Resources Agency. We seek partnerships to further develop opportunities to serve our local creek lands and the connections with aquaculture, to use our nonprofit status to coordinate among interested parties on voluntary protection measures, and to seek a nexus with the ag community to support riparian habitat enhancement. I like to say that salmon enhancement has no power, no authority, and very little money, but we have a lot of freedom to work with all types of land uses and bring grant funding in a very creative way to the landscape to support everyone's goals to some degree. And I also wanted to finish with a brief announcement that there's a word up there that encapsulates what will likely to become our new name. We're going through a renaming, rebranding process right now, and in the next 6 months you will see, I believe, the word Creeklands as our new name. And I do believe that it serves us in a way that salmon enhancement stopped serving us about a decade ago, and we're very excited to continue our relationships with private and public landowners and folks who care and work toward water quality objectives all over the coast. Thank you, and I'm happy to take your questions.
Thank you, Steph. I'll start on my left. Delgado.
Thank you, Steph. This is the first time I've been introduced to you and your work, and you said you've been doing this since the early 2000s, so thank you for everything you've done. That's quite a legacy. The one question I want to ask you is a conceptual one regarding our reliance on beneficial uses, including cold water fishes and in some cases salmon. The concept is that we should probably not, some say, we should probably not have beneficial uses for fish along waterways in certain waterways that haven't had fish for a long time. And others might say, well, maybe we need to restore or enhance those waterways so they can once again have fish rather than remove the beneficial use since they haven't had fish. What's your general take on that?
Well, my opinion is that there are certain waterways that are no longer viable waterways for migratory fish. However, there is a recovery plan, a federal recovery plan on the landscape, and that is pretty much what we use as guidance. It is a guidance document. It's not regulatory, although it ends up being regulatory in many aspects. And so I would say that we need to look at the strongholds for certain species like steelhead trout and find ways to preserve those strongholds where there still are fish and there's still reasonable habitat. For example, Napomo Creek once had trout. Does it have trout now? No. We did a watershed management plan for Napomo Creek because we were interested in it as a tributary to the Santa Maria River, which still does have trout go up occasionally, but not very often, to the Sisquoc River, which is still an open wild river. And so I guess in summary, it depends. In the Salinas River, for example, most of the large tributaries can still support a steelhead trout population, and they do, and the agencies are very interested in working with all land uses to see that they don't blink out. In the case of the one I gave just a minute ago, Napomo Creek, probably not. You know, I've taken that off my radar. I've actually taken Los Barros Creek for the time being off my radar for reasons that, you know, there's only so much money and there's only so much time. And we do have to prioritize the restoration projects that we do. And we're going to go where people want us to go. And so if we don't have landowner support, public or private landowner, then we can't do anything because we don't own the land. So we have to have those partnerships to do this work.
Thank you.
Mr. Young?
Thank you. Nice presentation. Glad to see someone is working diligently to help enhance fisheries. I'm kind of surprised that is this the first time we've seen No, it isn't. Okay. When was the last time you were here?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Quite a while.
It's been a while. Okay. Kind of a question more for staff, I think, but perhaps yourself. Your historic versus current steelhead distribution, okay, map. I'm kind of curious of those reaches of the Salinas that are not currently inhabited with steelhead. Do you have a breakdown as to the cause for those?
I do not, but one of the aspects of developing this conceptual plan will help us get a handle on that. The steelhead conceptual plan, we're working with the water agency in Monterey and their consultants, Fish Bio, to gather all the data that has been collected in Monterey County, and we're doing the same on the San Luis side, to figure out where the habitat degradation has occurred, what land uses are adjacent, and to start developing essentially a concept plan for how we would work in those areas if they're high enough priority. In the case that I, the example that I gave earlier of Napomo Creek, it's going to fall off, you know, in terms of priority. Some of these smaller waterways, if they've been damaged, I won't say to the point of no return, but we do have to prioritize, and we're doing triage in terms of figuring out where best to put limited dollars to keep the species from blinking out, but also to support practices that can benefit someday, I hope, a return of the species to those historic channels.
Well, when that review becomes available, I don't know when that's going to happen, but it would be nice if at least the Water Board at that point in time looks at it and then examines what ability it has within its regulatory structure to help facilitate enhancing the recovery of fish in those reaches of whatever river we're looking at.
It'll be publicly available.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Dr. Hunter?
Hello.
Hey.
Hi, Steph. It's so good to see you, and I'm just so impressed with how much you are actually on the ground and getting things done. One surprise today was your expanding or incorporating work on groundwater recharge, and especially looking at the connections between groundwater and surface water flows. Can you tell me a little bit about what triggered that, or was that the logical growth of, you know, the work that started at Salmon Enhancement?
Well, this is no surprise, but fish need water. And one way to figure out where that water can come from is to work with the adjacent riparian landowners. And as you all know, SGMA is part of our regulatory landscape now. Mm-hmm. And so that, along with a very talented hydrologist, came to us and said, hey, I want to work on streamflow augmentation. And we said, okay. And then not necessarily as luck would have it, there was some strategy involved when the WCB started their streamflow enhancement program. We were right there. We were ready. And so that started the countywide monitoring that really stood on the shoulders of the existing in-stream flow study that had been done by Stillwater Sciences, as well as the Phase 1 watershed plan. So we were poised and ready to go. We really were helping. Really, one of the big stressors for me was helping the county get a handle on environmental water demand. That had been a lacking piece of data forever.
Yes.
All of the urban watershed or water management plans. There was no way to identify what environmental water demand was. The county attempted to over the years, but never got there. And so this low flow monitoring process has really helped to shore up that data gap for the county. And we continue to work with the county with their stream gauge network and help them do their rating curves. And we think everybody's boat has been raised as a result.
Yeah, absolutely. That leads me kind of into my next question, in that you're familiar with work I did before I joined the board, and one of my goals was to see the network of organizations working more collaboratively, both within the agencies and with the private sector and nonprofit organizations. And I'm just curious because I see so many dimensions to your program. Do you see that broader nexus of collaboration and coordination of technical expertise and resources, et cetera, and kind of eliminating that competitive grab for funds when, the efficiency is gained in partnerships? How do you see that as having, supported your work?
The Coast and Ocean program that you were involved in really, really did spark that. And a couple of things that grew out of that include a partnership called the San Luis Obispo Steelhead Initiative. And so that's the City of SLO, Morro Bay National Estuary Program, and Central Coast Salmon Enhancement, California Conservation Corps, and the Land Conservancy. Banded together to bring the Watershed Stewards program to our community. So Watershed Stewards is an AmeriCorps program, mm-hmm. and they're able to get on the ground and do a lot of the field work in terms of data collection that we just don't have the funding for. Right. And so that was an outgrowth of the court process. We continue to see just great partnerships grow up locally and regionally. We were asked to do a number of contracts as a result, not directly growing out of that, but our name began to be associated with working with all land uses. And so we were working with the San Miguelito Mutual Water Company on the Murray Weir to try to see fish passage improvement there. We're working on a microflows project because we are in the land of little water here on the Central Coast as opposed to some of the big water. It's really challenging to measure very small flows, and there isn't really good data for that. And so National Fish and Wildlife Foundation reached out to us and asked us to work on the Central Coast to develop some of those techniques. So we'll be sharing that statewide as we move forward with that. We're just calling that the Microflows Project.
Wow.
And we're also working with Camp SLO, Endangered Species Management Component, on Camp SLO so that we can do some steelhead restoration there. We're working with the Carmel River Steelhead Association. We did a large wood debris project up there. So those partnerships are key. One of the proudest partnerships that we have right now is with state parks. They're asking us to develop their water quality monitoring programs in their estuaries. So this is beyond what Central Coast Wetlands Group has been doing, and really targeting some very rigorous water quality monitoring within their estuaries, particularly San Simeon Creek Estuary.
Wow. I can just applaud, the leadership in engaging the community so broadly. And it is really, in our early visioning of how to be more effective with all of our passions in terms of restoration and maintaining, sustaining habitat and wildlife, that these things have actually been supported in different ways. So thank you for updating me on work that has continued and understanding how important it is that that local network of organizations is something that increases the reach as well as the strength and the rigor of the work going on. It's very serious work that you're accomplishing. Is significant and impactful, and I really appreciate you updating us on all of that.
Thank you.
It's great.
It's really nice to see you. I'm a little disappointed that fish heads didn't rise to the naming convention. That would have been a great title for the organization, but Creeklands will do as
that's
well.
Maybe that's a tagline. Fishheads at the Central Coast.
There you go. But it's really it's great to have you here, and I'm always just impressed at the stakeholder engagement that you have and the broad folks that you work with in the public and private sector to achieve the goals. I've been to your meetings in past lives, and the people at the table have channeled their passion into really, incredible projects that reach pretty much every level of the watershed, you're always really successful in getting people to dialogue, and I find that really laudable. So thank you for your work. And I'm also interested, it sounds like you have a lot going on and potentially some good data to share. So I'm hoping that you'll come back to us and communicate with staff and share that groundwater data. I think that's really timely and something we can use and implement. So thank you for being here.
Sir Johnston.
It's an impressive body of work for your organization that you've laid out. And what I would like to hear is specifically, do you have thoughts as to, in terms of the ag waiver that we're working on, what growers, what the regional board can do with regard to agricultural activities and discharges to ensure that riparian habitat is protected?
One of the programs that we're still in pilot on is called crowdsourcing. It's a crowdsourcing program and it involves citizen science. And we put staff gauges out in creeks, and you take your smartphone, and there are directions right next to that staff gauge. So that's something anybody can do. They don't need to have specialized scientific background to do that. That's where I'd like to see compliance and monitoring go, where there is essentially a citizen science component that growers can use on their own operations that is easy from the user's point of view, fairly inexpensive, because I don't want food prices to go up. There are so many reasons for that to happen anyway. And it does, as was suggested earlier, bring the responsibility back to the party that is participating in an activity. And we are getting some traction with a university on the East Coast to become the West Coast crowd hydrology group. So that's what we're calling it right now, crowd hydrology. We've got a couple of sites out there so far in pilot form. And I do think that crowdsourcing idea, I mean, there's plenty of examples for it, you know, in terms of programming a system. You know, oops, the CCAM program got its start years and years ago, and they had to develop all that stuff. I think there's probably programs out there where this sort of do-it-yourself monitoring and handheld, even your phone app is with a probe perhaps attached to it, is something I'd like to see in a future monitoring effort.
Okay, so crowdsourced as part of our ag monitoring program, crowdsourced
where the crowd would be the growers.
Component.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else specific to the ag waiver?
Well, I just want to keep working with my ag partners. We educate each other all the time. And, you know, they own the land. They manage the land. If we can find some common ground, so much the better. So I really want to just keep those partnerships growing.
Thank you.
So, Steph, thank you for your presentation. I know you for over 18 years. Yeah, I know, time flies. When we first had a meeting together in somebody's home regarding a watershed, I remember that meeting very clearly. And when Mr. Young mentioned, when was the last time we saw you, there was actually one, when you were chair, there was a significant project that your board helped contribute to. That was an ACL with PISMO, and it was a discharge.
Right.
And salmon enhancement came and requested if they could perhaps, you know, being a recipient of some of the funding, which gracefully it was agreed, and very good work came out of that. So that was one example, I think, of a relationship. Earlier, you in your presentation, you talked about the fish-friendly farming program, and I totally agree with you because there is a very good success story in Napa, for example.
Yes.
Napa has a very well-regarded fish-friendly program, which is a bit of a win-win for the growers and the wineries because, one, they do the right thing, for the fish environment, but also it provides them a marketing recognition for buyers who, you know, tend to, you know, you vote with your wallet. And certainly there is a good program, and as you well know, Oregon has also a fish-friendly program that is very successful. So outside of this room and meeting, anything I can do to help you re-spark that, you know, count me in. I'll be in your subcommittee. One area that I think, you know, is a challenge, and when you talk about the partnership with farmers, is that it is very challenging to perform riparian enhancement projects because of all the permitting requirements. You know, you have the Water Board, you have NOAA, you have Fish and Wildlife, you have Army Corps. You have to have the Native American Indian surveys if you are in a known, you know, in Indian culture area. And the list goes on. So one of the things that I have advocated in the past, and this is too big for, you know, for one person to pursue, but ways to have more of a one-stop shop approach for these permits. And I know that the RCDs have tried to do this with some of the
programmatic.
Yeah. Thank you. Program. Thank you, ladies. So that's an area I think we need to recognize, and anything we can do to help. And then now I'm going to be making eye contact with our state board liaison, with Didi in the back of the room, is that I found unfortunate that some of the Water Board permits fees for these projects, you know, have been significantly increasing. I understand the issue we discussed earlier of, you know, staff resource, somebody has to pay for it. But you take the project like the Salinas River, the permit fees were very, very large. And if my memory serves me right and helped me calibrate that, I think it was like $100,000 plus. So one of the issues, and I know I preach to the choir when I tell you these things, but, you know, growers get a grant. So you get an EQIP grant. Then comes these very high fees which come out of the grant, and so I don't have the answer to that, but it certainly there is a need to help a little bit in the incentive programs of the cost. Even if you have with the EQIP used to be 50-50, contribution, matching funds, etc. I think that's an area we can work a little bit better in finding ways to to encourage.
And there is progress. It's slow, but it is moving. Sustainable Conservation, which is a statewide organization, has been working with the federal agencies to do more programmatics in the restoration world. And there is one grant program, a state fisheries restoration grant program, that actually includes a 401, a 404, and CEQA. They do it in, as part of the grant program. So if you essentially, you're conditioned with your project to do it in that way, and then you're covered. So you write your grant and you figure out your tasks so that you can fit into that program sometimes. But I'd also say that the new grant funding sources that are coming out on the landscape soon, including Prop 68 and, of course, the one that came out a few years ago, Prop 1, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has been engaged in a public dialogue to figure out how to do more of that streamlining, because right now their Prop 1 funds do not include any kind of permit coverage. And so that's a challenge. And so the statewide listening group has been going on, and the director will be receiving those recommendations. I think today's Friday, right? I think it's today.
All right. And then I'll I'll finish by also supporting a bit the question of Mr. Johnson in terms of what can be done. And I think certain things, like you pointed out, can be done at low cost in terms of monitoring. In you know, there are properties where you have a bridge, you have a stream level ruler, so it's not my automatic gauge, but then, you know, just writing down or taking the photo of the level of the water during high flow. These are all very simple things that can be done, and I know you have had volunteers doing that, in also doing collaboratively some sampling, and even any identification of steelhead. If steelhead was noticed in one of the resting pools, to provide notification, so that helps a little bit on the fish count. I know you've been involved with that too. So again, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to see you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And we will now take a lunch break, 45 minutes. So that brings us to 1:30. So thank you.